Coming to you live from a fogged out apartment somewhere in the United States, it's the TH Cinema Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the TH Cinema Podcast. My name is Dan, and with me, as always, is the pumpkin and spice to my latte.
Oh, so nice.
I like that one.
The monster mashes to my graveyard smashes.
Whatever happened to the Transylvania twist?
Snort.
Hello.
Silent John.
Hello.
And Frank couldn't be here today. So we just finished smoking a little bit of weed.
Nice little Sunday brunch.
Yeah.
And we've constructed our altar to the spooky season gods by lighting pumpkin spice candles and providing pumpkin spice snacks.
Am I the spooky gods? Because this is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, Snort, this is like your spooky dream.
Because we are moving from Summer of Smith into spooky season.
Man, and I'm so excited.
But you know what? We're staying on the Smith train, guys.
That's right. We're going to have kind of like a nice transitional move from Summer of Smith into the spooky season with Kevin Smith's Red State, which was kind of like his only real big attempt at horror. But it was in the part of his career where he was just trying a bunch of other shit. He was out of the Askewniverse. He hadn't come back to it yet. And this one was written and directed by him, much like Clerks was. And he really put a lot of love, much like he did with Clerks, into this movie.
So this is like a horror movie. What is like the subcategory for it? Like, what kind of horror movie is this?
Okay, it's really funny that you asked that. So earlier I watched a little like YouTube clip of him doing an interview. And Kevin was talking about how it is a horror movie, but it's also not. Because at this point in his career, he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to continue making movies. Because this was post-cop-out. This was, you know, he's off the askew train. He's pretty much, you know, kind of like drifting into the moonlight.
What year range are we talking?
So this movie came out in 2011. So you're 6 years, 5 years post Clerks 2. You're about 3 years post Zack and Mary Make a Porno. And you are 1 year post Cop Out.
Things aren't looking super, super hot at this point in time.
No, Kevin's kind of, all right, I'm going to have one last shot. And Kevin said that he thought this was going to be his last movie because of all of like the way his career was kind of going at this point. So he wanted to make every movie he ever wanted to make in one movie.
Just throw it all on the board.
All of it, yeah. Okay. He's like, okay, I've always wanted to make a horror movie. I've always wanted to make a thriller. I've always wanted to make a police movie. Like a good one, not Cop Out. So he kind of just cobbled this whole thing together. And it ends up working out very well for him. If the name Kevin Smith wasn't attached to this movie, if the name Eli Roth was attached to this movie, even in the modern age, if the name Jordan Peele was attached to this movie, it would have gotten so much more widespread attention.
So this sounds like a movie that people need to maybe revisit in today's timeline and kind of get to that status.
Definitely in today's timeline, because it's also very current events political, because it's based on the Westboro Baptist Church.
See, so that's interesting, because now it kind of sounds like with making this movie is maybe like a last ditch effort to, you know, still keep this going. Do you think Kevin Smith thought tackling such a, you know, prolific topic would kind of do like a Dogma thing and propel him back up into the limelight a little bit?
Well, it definitely did have that Dogma effect, because there were Westboro Baptist Church protesters at premieres of this movie at Sundance.
Which, I mean, you would have to assume that was going to happen.
Yeah. And Kevin, in pure Kevin fashion, organized a counter-protest of Kevin Smith fans.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And the Smithsonian showed up in force and out-protested the protesters.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah. Fuck those people.
Yeah, and fuck those people indeed. So when Kevin released this movie, he actually did a roadshow similar to what he did with Clerks, because he did a whole like independent distribution. He really went back to his roots with how he made Clerks and like took it around to distributors and took it around to different cities, kind of like how he's going to do when we go see him in November. And when he had taken this movie to the Midlands Theater in Kansas City, a couple of people during the Q&A stood up, and it was Lily Phelps and her brother Josh Phelps of the Phelps clan, who had defected like a year before, a year and a half before, from the Westboro Baptist Church. They'd come to see Kevin's movie, and during the Q&A they came up and like introduced themselves, and he brought them on stage and did like a full Q&A with them.
Damn, that's crazy. This on YouTube?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's going to the next watch whenever we get to YouTube again.
And they say, you know, how visceral to their experience that this whole thing felt. Like, they were like, did you have spies in the Westboro Baptist Church while you were writing this movie to tell you about the things that were happening in there? Because this was like being at home.
Dang. So what you're saying is this movie is a very accurate portrayal to people who were a part of this whole thing.
Very much so.
Wow.
That gets me really psyched up for this.
And Kevin actually did want to shoot this in the Midwest. He didn't end up shooting in the Midwest. He ended up shooting in California just to, you know, accommodate schedules, a little bit cheaper, all the things, yeah. You know, shooting in the middle of fucking backwoods Kansas has got to be a little expensive to truck all that shit across country. But he did shoot this movie in a very unique way. This was his first attempt at digital filmmaking. This was the first time he used the like 4K red cameras.
Oh, okay.
And he shot the entire movie sequentially. And edited it at night. After he finished shooting for the day, he would edit the scenes down to where they needed to be. And he actually, at the wrap party, released a rough cut for everyone to watch. The movie they just shot 2 days ago, they just wrapped.
Okay, wow, that seems like a whole lot of work. But too, why? Why did he do it that way?
Because it's kind of like how he made his Clerks movies, you know? Oh. Like, he would shoot all day, he would edit all night. Like, it was, this was, again, this was his, I'm going to show people that I have the ability to do the potential they thought I did when I did Clerks.
Okay, that makes sense.
So he took that early skill set that helped him thrive and threw it into almost like a passion project that was like that final thing he didn't get to tackle yet, pretty much.
Yeah, and something beautiful, much like with Clerks, something beautiful came out of it. You've got some great performances in this movie. You know, Kevin Smith, great director. He can direct people very well, but you got some great toys for him to work with. You got John Goodman.
Yeah, who else is in this cast?
You got Michael Park, who is a old-time Tarantino person. He plays like the sheriff in all the Tarantino movies.
That name sounds really familiar.
And he plays the Fred Phelps character in this, fucking mind-blowing. There's a couple of younger actors who you might recognize from other roles. They're kind of like, oh, that guy's. There's a couple of that guys floating around in this movie.
Honestly, John Goodman alone sells me. He is brilliant. And to see him in a movie tackling a topic like this, it just sounds like a perfect pairing.
Yeah.
And you've also got a little bit of Steven Root popping up.
Who?
Steven Root is one of the greatest American actors. He's the guy who played Milton in Office Space. Yeah. He's Pappy O'Daniel in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He's every fucking where. He's one of the best actors. Like, he's DeVito if DeVito could actually not DeVito.
Didn't he do voices in King of the Hill?
Yeah, he was Bill Dautry.
Yeah, that's it. Fucking Dodgeball, come on. Okay. Oh. He's in Get Out. He's the guy that is like trying to, who like bought like Daniel Kaluuya's like character and is getting the surgery.
Yeah, that guy's probably got one of the most extensive Hollywood careers of anybody. He's in fucking everything and he's worked with everybody.
Yeah, he's done a multitude of things and he's good at all of them. And now just like picturing him and Goodman in this movie, like, I have an idea of where I think this movie's going, and I love it already.
All right, but I'm really excited to show you this movie. Great performances, well shot, beautiful fucking film, out of context for Kevin Smith, and somehow he fucking makes it work. So let's go watch some fucking Red State.
Let's do it.
Yeah, fuck the Westboro Baptist Church.
feature presentation.
I found the movie, and we all brought the snacks, and we're back. And we just watched Red State.
What a deeply demented movie.
And really intense.
From the mind of Kevin Smith.
Yeah, let me tell you what, this is one of the most tense movies I've seen in a minute. And I am a sucker for a good, ooh, kind of movie.
Yeah, and it's a lot of different kinds of movies. It starts out very House of a Thousand Corpsey, and then it kind of moves into more of a Devil's Rejects kind of Fed standoff type thing at the end. A little bit of like military style action. Like you could see like Kevin Smith was like, oh, I've never shot a gunfight before. I've never shot a thing ramming through a gate on fire. I'd like to shoot that once in my career.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of like big swings in this movie that I do think it all paid off and worked together.
Yeah, this feels so much like it's not a Kevin Smith movie, kind of like what you said in the beginning, Dan. And I mean that in the best way possible. Like, this is not a movie I think I would have ever expected him to do. But even like the action scenes and the way people were just getting their freaking heads blown off in such a tight, tense way. I don't know. I'm blown away by this movie.
Yeah, see, he didn't set just the precedent for the shared MCU-esque universe. He also set the precedent for Jordan Peele of who the fuck is this comedian guy and why is he doing fucking weird horror movies that are intense and politically meaningful. He walked so Jordan Peele could run.
I could see that because he definitely takes a very strong stance on different issues with this movie. And it's nice to see the good guys get one up on the bad guys in the end with such a hot topic.
Yeah, and this movie was difficult to find. I did have to go like deeper than I did for Dogma to try to find this one.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Is there a reason for that?
I'm not sure the reason. It's not available on any streaming platform to purchase. So, Kevin, if you're listening and you want me to, hit us up on the DMs and I'll Venmo you fucking $20 for watching this movie illegally.
I mean, it seems fair.
And I don't know why it's nowhere, but it's very, very well done. You've got the movie starts out with the kid from Sky High and his friend, who's another kid from Sky High. And then, like, the dude that looks like the dude from the Dell commercials but isn't.
I know that guy is in, like, other stuff that I've seen, but I have no idea what.
Well, what they're into in this movie is motherfucking pussy. Because that's what they're hunting.
What a bizarre situation to watch unfold. But, man, it kind of, I mean, you know, it's just the Midwest, I suppose.
Yep, little small town, and they're planning on meeting up with some nice lady about a half an hour drive away to all ball her at the same time.
Yeah, what's the worst thing that can happen, you know?
Well, the worst thing that can happen is the worst thing that does happen, because they all get fucking kidnapped by this church, and that's when you finally, like, during the scene where they're rolling the Dell kid out in the cage after he'd drinking the, you know, Bill Cosby beers at the trailer, and he's getting wheeled out, and you're hearing, like, all this singing, and I don't know if you noticed this, but there was no score to this movie at all.
Huh. I didn't notice it, but now that you say it, I do.
Yeah, now it sticks out to me with that little tidbit.
Yeah, the only songs that were in the movie was like the church group actually singing songs while all these crazy scenes were happening.
And it really gives such an like eerie vibe, because the scene you're just now talking about with him being rolled out, it was at this point where I really thought, okay, things are kind of fucked in this movie.
Yeah, that's definitely when we had to turn the volume down so my neighbors didn't think we were actually murdering people in my apartment, because that's where the movie kind of devolves into a lot of screaming and yelling for righteous reasons. But when they pull up the sheet and he's yelling for help and he's surrounded by all these people that aren't going to fucking help him and children, and there's something just like, ooh.
Yeah, especially whenever, like, I think it was a kid that pulled up the sheet. That's when you're like, oh, what the fuck? These people are crazy.
Yeah, this runs deep in this family. And it was just, I don't know. I think the kid definitely amps up the creepiness, because having a kid caged up like a fucking wild animal, like just trotted on stage. That is such a bizarre thing to see, but such a fucked up thing.
Yeah, but complete normalcy to the people in the pews. But that's when you meet the patriarch of the family, Albin Cooper, who's played by Michael Park.
Man, this guy knocked it out of the park. He's somebody that I hated so much, and I'm so mad that he did this so well, considering what the character is. But damn, what a performance.
Yeah, his opening monologue in the church.
Like 10, 15 minutes, it just goes and goes and just pulls you in, and you're just like, oh, what the fuck?
And you've got these shots to all these people just nodding along and agreeing and all this vileness coming from his mouth. Like, it's so just, it makes your skin crawl, but not in like a horror movie fashion, like anticipation of something happening. It's just like, oh.
Yeah, and then the fact that everybody is just family, like, just makes it even grosser, because they're just like, ugh, it's just nasty.
There's so many layers to the hatred that you begin to unpack, and you're like, ugh, just despicable people.
I had a thought during this movie. I was like, damn, I was like, I'm more creeped out and stuff by these people than I am, like, Michael Myers. That was an actual thought.
Yeah, I'd definitely rather run into an army of ghost faces than the Westboro Baptist Church with knives.
1,000%. And that's a good point that you made, Snort, because, yeah, I had that same kind of thought of, man, this movie is weirdly, like, scarier than like, a typical slasher movie because of how more, like, real this feels to me. Like, this could happen to just anybody at any time.
This, like, has happened before.
Like, that's terrifying.
And as the service goes on, they take the children out of the room, and on the cross is the taped man. And they actually blew their entire special effects budget here, because they only had $5,000 in special effects budget for this movie, because it was super low budget again. And Kevin wanted it to be, like, you know, bloody and stuff, but he didn't want to pay for the cleanup every time after the scene. So that's why they did, like, the head hole thing, and, like, wrapping up his face in the saran wrap and shooting him, and...
I just thought it was an efficient way to kill someone. Also, there's no cleanup.
And an efficient way to keep your budget down.
Yeah, that was honestly even more fucked up than the whole kid in the cage thing to me. I don't know, there was something about it that just felt so meticulous. And it was like a show for the crowd. But at the same time, yeah, it was also like just very efficient and smart on the people. Like, I hated how into the setup I was.
But the people that were doing it, it also felt like it was reluctant. Like, yeah. They were just like, when Ralph Garman, Kevin Smith's friend, who's in all of his movies, who played Caleb, was putting the little crate down to like stand up and like awkwardly try to point the gun down at the guy's head. You could just tell it's like these people are just normal folk who are getting talked into this by a very charismatic leader, not unlike Jared Leto.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
No, we cannot compare Jared Leto to the Westboro Baptist Church.
Yet.
To be continued.
And the movie at this point, it's still kind of a very big horror movie, because then they dump the body in on the other two kids that are down there, and they're using like the bone that came out of the thing to cut themselves free.
Yeah, there was a lot of very just like stressful situations people were thrusted into in this movie. Like, the vision that Kevin Smith had was way better than I think I was going to give him credit for going into this. Like, I thought it was going to be more of like, I don't know, kind of psychological, and it definitely was, but man, was it still in your face the whole time.
And during all of this, Sheriff Stephen Root, who had gotten sideswiped by the boys on the highway while he was getting a blowjob, sends out Deputy Badger from Breaking Bad to go and kind of talk to the church people. And of course, this is all happening at the same time. When he arrives there, he sees the car, and he's questioning with Albin Cooper. And while that's happening, the kids have escaped downstairs, and they're running around, and like they're getting guns and yada, yada, yada. And again, just a great little tense moment that Kevin Smith manages to put together, because you know what's happening all over the fucking compound.
Right.
Well, and there's like all of these cuts and everything of them outside, and then like what's going on inside. And there was multiple spots in the movie where I thought about this, but one, this like being one of the first ones, that it's really impressive when you think about how they shot and how he edited it every night and stuff, and had like the rough cut of it at the end of filming. Like, very impressive after seeing this movie now.
Yeah, I was thinking that a lot during the chase scenes. Like, to me, the fact that it's Kevin Smith. He doesn't shoot chase scenes through hallways that are all, you know, canted angles and jerky. And, like, the cinematography in this movie was something Kevin's never done before. And it's well done. It's very well executed.
Maybe that's why this feels not like a Kevin Smith movie, is because the cinematography alone, I was blown away by it, honestly.
Yeah, and the tension building. And then you get everything kind of starting to pop off with Badger, the officer Badger, getting shot in the stomach after hearing the gunshots and calling it into Stephen Root. And then I don't know why they did like the Stephen Root. Is he going to kill himself? Is he not going to kill himself? That felt a little out of place.
Yeah, a little bit.
But ultimately, I guess he called the ATF, and that's when this movie stops kind of being a horror movie for the most part and turns into an action movie, police movie, military movie.
Yeah, and then the cinematography, like, changes again. Like, when you were talking about, I think the cinematography from the first half of the movie, or even, like, the first third of the movie, is completely different than the second or two-thirds of the movie.
Yeah, because it's a complete tonal shift in everything that he, like I said in the beginning, like, he said he wanted to do a bunch of different movies and just kind of mash them into one. And that's exactly what it feels like. When John Goodman's getting ready and talking on the phone to his bosses and stuff, it feels like a movie like, I don't know, Flight or something like that. Yeah. You know, something with a lot of exposition, a lot of long drawing shots.
Well, and honestly, it's just nice considering how heavy and intense that first part of the movie is to kind of give you a little breather and kind of like unclench for a second and let this new story unravel. I really appreciated that because things just progressively got darker and darker. And as a story, like, that's fantastic, but we all need a breather here and there. And the John Goodman story really helped, like, kind of separate it. And then that tonal shift began. And once again, he nailed it with what he went for with that vision, too.
Yeah, all in all, the movie feels like Kevin Smith's attempt at doing a Tarantino movie, for lack of a better way to describe it.
Man, I feel like this gives me, like, a whole new, like, set of eyes towards this when you say that. Damn.
But I really do love the second act after John Goodman's introduced. I love the way that they transition from the first story into it with the kid escaping and getting shot in the fountain. And then all of a sudden, John Goodman and his folks are there on the scene. You go through all those scenes of bureaucratic red tape and stuff like that, and them talking on the phone about the problem. And then the kid's running out. You think he's going to escape. Boom, one gunshot by Stephen Root. And now we're at the siege.
Yeah, and this part is whenever it turned into, like, my favorite part of the movie. Once this, like, tone change again happens, I think it's better than the horror part of it all.
I don't know if I put it better than the horror part, but I loved it probably just as much as the horror part. I really do think that every which way he tries to go with this movie, he nails it.
Yeah, and he's pulling rugs all over the place. The kid's going to escape. He gets shot. Later on, when you're finding out about the plan and you think the guy's going to save the girl and go help the kids, and he tries to shoot her and then gets shot by the mom. You know, the heartfelt speech in the girl's bedroom with the lone survivor from the original horror movie that it was. And, oh, yeah, they're going to work together. And he's like, fuck you, fuck you. I'm working with your bitch ass.
But I mean, is he wrong in that situation?
No, completely. And then they're both going to get rescued by John Goodman, and someone just walks up and shoots them in the face. Like, Kevin Smith is nailing so many, like, you think I'm going to do this? No.
Yep.
Nope. I'm not going to do that. It's just overall a well done movie. And I think the shootout scene, the siege scenes are done so fucking great. It brings back that same tension you had in the beginning of the movie when the kids are running through the hallways or getting carted out in the little fucking crate, because you've got bullets whizzing by you. And yet the entire time you've got John Goodman on the phone with his boss trying to get someone else conference called in and saying, you need to send me an email or a text if something's going to happen. You've got all this bureaucracy involved while you're in the middle of a gunfight and people are getting shot around you.
And it's just, like, all so casual. Like, we're in no rush. Let me just stand here and watch some damn horses while there's this, like, huge shootout going on.
Well, that was one of the things I loved, is there was still those small Kevin Smith touches of humor throughout this movie. They were way less of them, but they were still noticeable. Even in the pre-shootout scene where John Goodman is waiting to give the call, they're like, no, I'll give him a minute. And then they just have that long, awkward linger. I just found it hilarious for some reason.
Yeah, and then out of nowhere, his assistant gets just shot in the face mid-sentence.
Back in overdrive. It was brilliant.
And also the casualness going on in the house during the shootouts is something that I love. It's like this whole family just expected this to happen no matter what at some point.
It just, to me, it made it even creepier for them to just be, yeah, so welcoming of, yeah, well, we might die in gunfire. It's not a big deal, though. It's what's meant to happen.
It's almost like they were sacrificing themselves for it. Like, yeah, they were excited it was happening. Like, this is our time.
Yeah, this is what was foretold.
Yeah.
And we get a little bit more kind of that thriller, tension, horror type stuff because you've got a lot of running around going on inside the house, people running from people, blah, 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 blah. But once we get to the finality of the siege, this movie again takes another little twist because you have the people that you thought were going to be the heroes of the movie, the girl that watched all the little kids and the survivor from the first part of the movie running out. They both get shot in the head. But then the trumpets start sounding.
Maybe it's because of Dogma, but I really thought we were going to get something. Some sort of weird-ass creature to show up, honestly. In the end, I'm happy. We didn't go that route. But I was about to be so mad if this fucking dude was validated by some descendant to help save them.
I think originally the ending was supposed to have, much like Dogma, the heads and the hearts exploding. Yeah. I believe that was supposed to happen also. But when you've got a $5,000 special effects budget, you kind of have to rewrite some shit. But I love that John Goodman himself, like the characters, the siege agents, they're like, oh shit, we were wrong. This is the fucking rapture. And then you got everybody walking out and it's just one final rug pull that Kevin does because you cut to John Goodman in a little hearing about the situation. And yeah, it was a bunch of stoners from down the line just playing a little prank.
This is going to sound weird, but the cut to that scene just felt very, like, Coen Brothers-esque to me. I thought that was one of the best parts of the movie. And just the conversation that ensues, it was one of the funniest moments of the whole movie, was the ending of it. But it was also so powerful with the speech that John Goodman gives the end, trying to not justify the way people think, but just explain how people get to this fucked up, crazy, like, mindset.
Yeah, the whole thing has a commentary on the bureaucracy of government, on media, on religion, on beliefs, on passion. There's so many things that Kevin did so well in this movie that if this movie was presented 2018, much like Jordan Peele on that train, it probably would have gotten Kevin into a whole new line of his career.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to compare it to a Jordan Peele movie, but that's just me. But I get what you're saying. Yeah, I think it's a little, like, before its time, especially with, like, the social commentary with it.
Yeah, I think this movie just honestly leaves me disappointed that we don't already have more movies like this from Kevin Smith. I know he's dibble-dabbled in some other things, like Tusk feels like it may be horror-esque elements to it, but if he was able to pull something like Red State off, why doesn't he try more, I guess?
Yeah, I would definitely love to see a little bit more out of Kevin Smith in this kind of vein, but I think it's the perfect palate cleanser to kind of move you from the Summer of Smith into our spooky season, because it's our guy, it's our Askewniverse fella, our little boy.
He pulled it off. I couldn't be happier to start spooky season with the Smithsonian himself, Kevin Smith. This was fun. And genuinely, like, blown away by this movie. This was maybe one of my favorite Kevin Smith movies, like, just out of everything that I've seen. It's probably up there.
Yeah, definitely shows he doesn't just have to do Jay and Silent Bob jokes. But we do have a good spooky season ahead of us. Next week, we're going to officially be kicking off our spooky season. And we're going to be watching the sequel to Hocus Pocus, Hocus Pocus 2. We're going a little light to kick things off.
But hey, it's a must-see of the season.
Yeah, it would feel wrong to not do it.
No, I think Hocus Pocus 2, it's a, like you said, a must watch of the season. It's going to be fun. It's going to be Hocus Pocus 2. It's got Bette Midler in it. The Jew in me is always in on some Bette Midler.
Satisfies you, huh?
So I'm excited to do that. We've got a lot of great spooky season programming coming up. And if you want to follow along on Spooky Season with us,
go give us a follow on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at Teach Cinema Podcast. If you haven't already, do these two things. One, give us a rating, 5 stars. And two, leave us a review. Say something nice. It'd really help us out, and we'd appreciate it.
All right, well, that is going to do it for this week as we get into our spooky season. So if you see three people hooking an iPod up to a siren to play trumpet horn sounds in the Midwest, fuck with people. But they're also really, really high. Come over and say hi. That might just be us. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Yeah, bye. You know, fuck the Westboro Baptist Church.
Okay, we were talking about the Westboro Baptist Church.
Yeah,
fuck them. Sorry. Not sorry.
Hold on, I'm going to see if this works every time. Westboro Baptist Church.
Yeah, fuck them.
Westboro Baptist Church?
Yeah, fuck them. That was the point in the movie where I was like,
AC. And this quick air conditioning break brought to you by FanDuel. Now available in every market. FanDuel. Lose all your fucking money.
If you or anybody you know has a gambling problem, please contact 555-GET-HELP.
Dialing it now.
Hey guys, snort report, this just in. Rihanna's headlining the Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh. Okay, football so that was a whole thing. I thought she was going to say something about somebody getting a touchdown or something like that. So I thought it was going to be football news. And then she said Rihanna, and I was like, aw. But then she said football news again.
Exactly. That's what I could say.
Your mind was in the right spot.
That snort report took me full circle in emotions.
I unfortunately have no money on Rihanna at the Super Bowl halftime show, so...